Light rain falling in central Texas. A little storm. Not even a storm. Just light rain showers, little rain clouds moving through for your drive time as you get up and out on this Tuesday. Be safe out there. Be some slick streets, but nothing big, nothing major. It'll be good to have a little rain coming in. It's supposed to rain on Friday when Texas plays Iowa State. 70% chance on Friday. Longhorns and Cyclones. We'll hear more and talk more Tom Herman and Texas coming up. Coming out of his game week news conference yesterday, Longhorns come Friday will have had 20 days between contests. The last played November 7th in the win over West Virginia. How much improvement can they make? How healthy can they get in that window for a big three-game stretch that will decide the season as far as what people think of it. That's out there. We've got plenty of NFL news as well coming off week 11, wrapping up last night with Monday Night Football. Mentioned the stack fact of the day. I think a lot of people got this one right. Sean McVay, the young coach of the L.A. Rams, has already been to a Super Bowl, and you coached with his grandfather.
Not his father.
Not his father. I'm old. Remember, Zay, you didn't know that when Sean McVay became the coach, he was like, oh, yeah, I think I coached with his dad. And then we, like, dove in, and it's like, no, that's actually his grandfather. The grandfather you coached with.
Yeah, his grandfather was the head coach of the Giants when I was there.
Yeah. And when Joe Pisarcik broke your finger.
Yes. And Larry Zonka in his last year. And
yeah,
all he never played.
Dudes there.
Oh, dude never played. All he did was, you know, was it Harry Carson? I mean, Zonka never played. All he did was sit in the training room and pop pills and tell stories. Are you going to practice today, Larry? No, you know, not really feeling it today.
I told you this. If you've heard the story before, drink up. My father went to high school with Larry Zonka.
That guy was a big son of a gun, man.
Stowe, Ohio. Yeah, man. Northeast mean streets, you know what I'm saying? Well, here's the thing. I mean, this is how old you are because you realize that you were on the sidelines in the Hale Flutie game 36
yes.
years ago yesterday when Doug Flutie threw the touchdown pass.
Yeah, when people started asking me, where were you when John F. Kennedy was shot? What grade were you in? I was in fifth grade, yes.
You act much younger, but this will put in perspective your age and that you coached with his grandfather. Actually, we're on a team his grandfather coached.
Yes.
When you were on the sidelines with the Boston College miracle win over Miami, the Hale Flutie play.
Yes.
Sean McVay wasn't born yet. Sean McVay is 34 years old. 34 years old. That was 36 years ago that Hale Flutie play happened. So that's how young he is. But his team looked pretty sharp last night. And the fact of the day, as the coach of the Rams have a lead at halftime, last night was the 32nd time they led the game by a field goal, 17-14 at the half last night. They go on to win 27-24. His teams are now 32-0. 32-0 with a halftime lead. That's pretty good.
By the way, I saw him in his gear. He's not getting round-shouldered.
He's 34.
He's buffed.
Well, he kind of looks like John. We got into John Gruden's weight gain yesterday a little bit. That
was a nice way to put it. Just weight gain. That's a difference. That's not shaming.
It does feel like he's put on a little some LBs there.
I told that to BK. He goes, oh, my God, that dude is a monster.
Well, I mean, it's not to the point where you call him, you know, Chunky Foodin. I mean, John Foodin. But he lives in Vegas now, man. He's living the Vegas lifestyle.
He did a lot of traveling Monday Night Football. You always had to be prepared. You're always moving and ducking and
he had to be on
weaving.
TV. He had to be on TV. You know how coaches do. They live in the facility there. They're breaking film, eating bad food.
Every day. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he... But remember, John Gruden was Sean McVay before Sean McVay. John Gruden was a young, handsome-looking coach that was winning Super Bowls with the Raiders and the Buccaneers. And he was the young... You know, Yoda, Jedi.
That'd be a lesson to you all. We all get old, and we're very fortunate to make it that far to get old.
But now Sean McVay is the young Jedi who's 34. 32-0, by the way. What are we missing out on? Well, I run to the BetUS at halftime last night to just throw down a C-note on the
If you truly
Rams.
Know what you were doing when it comes to making wagers, you would know that stat, and you would have gone right to them and taken every cent from them. 32-0. That just tells you a little something, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it was 31-0 last night, and hadn't lost one yet. Until he does, just ride that train. He's eventually going to lose a game that he leads at half. That's just by
nature. But not the next one I bet on if they're up by half.
But if you bet on it, that'll ensure that they lose the game.
Gosh.
That'll ensure that they lose the game.
That's amazing.
All right.
Yeah, that's hard to do. That 32 when you're up at half.
It's the NFL. The National Football League.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, if you're up by one, you win. He wins.
Well, I mean,
when he's up.
Gosh, just look at the examples of Anthony Lynn with the Chargers and Matt Patricia in Detroit. How many fourth quarter double digit leads have they blown?
Well, like, not only that, you can't put that hobo in there. That hobo can't coach.
Well, if you watch the Chargers this year, they've lost like five games that they've led by more than a touchdown in the second half. So it's one thing to be up at halftime, but to be leading by double digits in the fourth quarter and lose. That's your bad coach. That's bad. That's not good. And Sean McVay, if he has yet the halftime, it's over. It has yet half, it's over. At this point in his young career, he is only 34 years old yet. Hey, let's get to those headlines. That's your fact of the day. We'll get to your trending topics, though. You got to make sure you're in the know. Get caught up. UBO Business Services brings it to you. We'll get to plenty of Texas football and hear from Tom Herman coming up. Of course, 20th-ranked Longhorns hitting the practice field yesterday to begin game week prep for Friday's showdown game with 15th-ranked Iowa State. It is senior day for the Longhorns at DKR. We will hear from Tom Herman on the health of his team. It should be pretty good when they kick off at 11 o'clock on Friday. Recruiting news, more bad news for folks here in the Lone Star State. On the heels of landing Quinn Ewers, the number one quarterback prospect in the 2022 recruiting cycle, the Ohio State Buckeyes yesterday got the verbal commitment from five-star wide receiver Caleb Burton from Del Valle High School right here in Central Texas. Burton is a five-star recruit listed as the top wide route for the 2022 class, according to 24/7 Sports. He's following Quinn Ewers to Columbus. Monday Night Football to wrap up Week 11. We just mentioned it. Tom Brady, Jared Goff outduels Tom Brady and the LA Rams get a win over Tampa Bay. 27-24 final. They get the victory and a big win for the Rams. They're now 7-3, pulling to first place. Same record as the Seattle Seahawks in that division at 7-3. Brady and the Bucks fall to 7-4. Elsewhere in the NFL, the backsliding Baltimore Ravens have placed running backs Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins on the reserve COVID-19 list yesterday. Both have tested positive for the virus. They will not play when the Ravens play in primetime Thursday night, their Thursday night Turkey Day special against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Season is over for Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and number one overall draft pick in last April's draft, suffered a torn ACL and MCL in Sunday's game with Washington. The severity of the injury is worst-case scenario for the Bengals. Typical nine-month to a year recovery for that severe of an injury does put into doubt his available for next season. NBA free agent center DeMarcus Cousins has signed a one-year deal with the Houston Rockets. Incentive laden, the 30-year-old missed all of last season with a left ACL injury suffered as a member of the LA Lakers. Of course, he's missed most of the last three seasons with various injuries.
This segment brought to you by UBO Business Services. Great people, great service, endless possibilities. That's UBO Business Services. Visit them at ubeo.com.
You know, anything can happen, but that Joe Burrow injury is, they had some structural stuff that's kind of screwed up. He tore it all. I mean, he didn't leave anything behind.
Well, the injury was so severe, CBS wouldn't show the replay.
Yeah, they...
Because it was, he wasn't, you know, dirty, but, you know, he threw the ball, planted his left leg.
And it didn't come up off the ground.
And a bunch of people fell into him. You know, it was one of those, you know...
Yes.
A pass rush coming and offensive linemen and the defensive linemen fall into his leg.
Yeah, the ankle is one when it's going sideways, but when the knee and that whole leg goes sideways, he ripped it all, so...
Yeah, that's going to be... You know, obviously you don't want to rush that back because is still your franchise quarterback. But if you're the Bengals, it just puts you a year. This was kind of the year to get his feet wet and then build around him. You may not have him next year because you're not going to put him back on the field until he's fully healthy. And this is November now. So if it's indeed a 9-month to 12-month rehab, you know, you may not see him at all until after Thanksgiving next year if you're being as, you know, conservative as you can with his injury, which you think they're going to be organizationally.
Yeah, very interesting that the coach at K-State said this week with his young quarterback, he said, I had to get him out of there. I thought they were going to kill him, that Iowa State was going to kill him. He said he was, you know, he just didn't see the field real well, and he kept taking hits. He said, I got him out of there for his own good. Very seldom do that. They very, very seldom do coaches just get you out for that. They say, you go in there, get rid of the ball. This is what you have to do. They said, we didn't want to get him hurt. How about that?
That's how good Iowa State played in that game. And, yeah, young quarterback, sometimes the speed of the game is just too much. I mean, you don't know what you're seeing.
And it's really weird because if you saw him play the week before or 2 weeks before when he played, you would have thought, man, he's going to get better over that week. He did some really nice things. He fumbled one, just burped it up, and then threw an interception. And I'm thinking, well, another week under his belt. But when the head coach said, he just wasn't seeing anything except for opposing guys all up in his face, and I had to get him out because I didn't want to get him hurt. That tells you a little something right there.
With that in mind, speaking of good coaching, let's dive into our Coach's Corner here on B&E on a busy Tuesday.
Welcome to the Coach's Corner.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, avconsultations.com. And, you know, that goes right to Tom Herman in Texas, right? I mean, they've had 3 weeks to prepare for this Iowa State team that, you know, Chris Klieman referred to and had to get their quarterback out last Saturday on a 45-0 blitzing of that. I mean, look, Matt Campbell's a great coach. I mean, there's a lot of people through the Midwest who believe Matt Campbell, this may be the last time you see Matt Campbell at Iowa State if you're a Texas fan, that he, you know, if things continue as they're going in Ann Arbor, that Michigan's going to come calling for Matt Campbell.
And I believe that will, if they lose to Penn State, who's lost every game so far, and it's at home, and Michigan doesn't beat Penn State.
Ohio State in December, too, by the
way. Oh, don't worry about that. That's 100. That's nothing's going to change that.
Things are not trending well for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. And that's how good of a coach Matt Campbell is. We've known that, right? He's been at Iowa State now 6 years because he wanted to commit to this and build this thing. And they've got a chance to win the Big 12. I mean, they're sitting at 6-1. And what you just described from Chris Klieman is what makes Matt Campbell a really good coach. He's got a great staff. And they're going to bring something for Texas on Friday that Texas isn't expecting. They're going to have John Heacock and that defense that play. Tom Herman compared it to playing a wishbone offense. It's such a unique, and you don't want to call it a junk defense because that's kind of a disparaging adjective. But it's just your quarterback ends up seeing ghosts. You're not sure. They drop eight into coverage most times, but then they'll bring guys from other places. You're not sure who's covering what end. Are they playing man? Are they playing zone? They disguise that really, really well, and it makes the quarterback unsure, which is what has led, you know, Matt Campbell and that program to be able to overachieve with lesser athletes to some of these teams. Remember, they already beat Oklahoma this year. Now they've got Texas in their sights, and they've got an opportunity. But this flips it right back to Tom Herman in Texas. What do you have? You've had 3 weeks. You've seen this defense now, and you've seen Matt Campbell and this team for 3 seasons now. What do you have as a head coach? I was really impressed anytime you watch Lincoln Riley's teams play, right? I mean, Oklahoma, they had an extra week to prepare for Oklahoma State, who came into Norman on Saturday with the best defense in the Big 12. And within three possessions, Lincoln Riley had shredded them. They were up 21-0. They knew exactly what the strengths of the Oklahoma State defense were, the weaknesses. They attacked it. And, Buck, they had 3 touchdowns on the board before there were 10 minutes off the clock. That's coaching, right? That's scheming. That's watching film and then understanding how to get your players in position to take advantage of that. What will lead you to think Tom Herman's going to have that with Mike Yurcich on Friday against a defense? They know what's coming. It's anything new.
I can only go on the fact that Tom Herman with time has done really well when he's had time.
Yes.
That's it. I mean, like I said, I don't like stats, but that's a stat that I feel like when that guy has time to coach him up, he finds ways. I don't know what it is, rah-rah or whatever he does, but he finds ways to get his team up. Now, their favorites going into this game, I still don't know how they're favorites or why they're favorites.
Because they have the better players.
Vegas knows that too, do they?
Yeah. Texas has better players than Iowa State. And that's not to say Iowa State doesn't have good players. I mean, Breece Hall's a great running back. Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. They've got, you know, Kolar, the tight ends, going to the NFL. They've got good players.
Mm-hmm.
But Texas has more good players than they do. And they've had 3 weeks off to prepare for this game. And I think that has to be seen as an advantage, right? The health of Texas, the freshness of Texas. And that's where, no matter what we talk about in this bizarre season, you know, Tom Herman talks about the no spring practice, 7 new coaches, offense and defense, all new, which led to some of the sloppiness of the first 3 games in Big 12 play, where they went 1-2.
Are they still doing? He's not still talking about that stuff,
no,
right?
No, but whether you want to buy into that or not, I mean, okay, let's take Tom Herman at his face. Okay, they had a rough offseason. It was a tough time to change out so many coaches and both the offense and the defense, and you'll give a little slack there, right? Okay, so you were sloppy in the first 3 games. You did clean it up a little bit in those 3 games that you won coming out of the first bye week, especially on defense and special teams. Well, what have you done now in this 3 weeks to improve the offense, to make sure? I'm never going to say Tom Herman is Lincoln Riley when it comes to scheming, but that's what I'm talking about. Did you see how Oklahoma came out and took care of business?
Oh, I said they were going to do that on Friday. I knew they were going to beat them. They were going to crush them, and there would be guys wide ass open, which, how do you get guys open like that unless you scheme them that way?
That's right. Like untouched touchdowns.
Yep.
On 3 straight possessions, That's great coaching, and that's I think Texas fans. There's nothing wrong with expecting that when you're investing this much money in a coaching
that
staff.
That I agree with. I mean, why can't there be any open gas? Just like, how did that guy get so wide open?
They've had a few this year to their credit. But yeah.
Lincoln Riley does it in the first quarter.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm saying in this coach's corner about Texas on Friday. That's what I don't think it's wrong to expect to see that. You have health is no longer an issue.
No.
Familiarity with the offense is no longer an issue. Right? I mean, your quarterback should be as fresh and healthy as he's been since September, Sam Ehlinger.
You actually have found you need to trust your running back. You found a guy.
Yeah, your freshman running back is no longer a freshman, and he's a dynamic player.
Yes.
Roschon Johnson, who was battling a shoulder injury, is now healthy. He's 100%. Keontae Ingram likely not to play, but Joshua Moore is back. Jordan Whittington is back. Brendan Schooler, the other wide receiver who's been battling nagging injuries, is back and healthy. Your tight ends are healthy.
And you better get Kai Money in the game or my disappointment will be terrible on Monday. That has to happen.
If we don't see Kai Money. But,
what?
I know that's an inside thing, but I'm just talking about the performance. There's no excuse for it. There's no excuse not to look sharp, buttoned up, and look like Oklahoma did on Saturday, where you just come out and...
Did you just say look like Oklahoma, really?
Yeah.
No.
Why? I'm not saying you have to be 21-0 and I'd be disappointed. I'm talking about the game plan, the attacking of what you really know you have to be able to do against this Iowa State team to be successful.
No, this is a dogfight. It'll be a dogfight. I know what you say that, and then you say, what do you expect? Don't you expect a dogfight here in this game? Basically.
I expect better offensively than I've seen this year. I expect the best offensive performance of the season, bar eliminating the UTEP game, which doesn't count. That's what I would expect.
Well, Sam will have to be, not only he'll have to be healthy, but he'll also have to be accurate. And his accuracy, whether he's healthy or not, is a problem.
That has been what they say they've really worked on in the time off. The sharpening of the passing game, the timing of the passing game, the chemistry between Sam and his receivers who've been in and out of the lineup. That's what I'm saying. All those excuses.
Yeah, your tight ends are all back.
All the excuses, there's not one now. I mean, the argument of, well, these new coaches are getting familiar with their personnel. They haven't really been on a practice field with them. That's kind of tough. We're kind of learning.
3 weeks
work
ahead,
in progress.
Yeah.
Well, look, the new coaches know their players. The new offensive coordinator and the players know the new system or whatever the changes were made. Let's just look sharp on offense. Let's attack some people. Let's get Iowa State on their heels like they like to do to people defensively. Again, Oklahoma State all year long had come in and really, put the screws to people defensively. Lincoln Riley changed that in 3 possessions.
Yeah, that game was over in the first quarter.
21-0. 21-0.
Two of those touchdowns, like we said, nobody was
untouched.
Nobody was around the guy.
Well, then that's just superior film study, execution, and understanding of where the defense's weaknesses are. Because they all have them. I mean, this isn't the 85 Bears coming in here Saturday, right? Or
no,
Friday.
I don't believe so at all. I've been watching this. I'm still not sold on them and on defense.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Watch the film, find the weaknesses, attack them with your best players.
They leave the middle of the field open a lot. If you just watch the Baylor film, this is how they play. They leave the middle open. As you said, they disguise E so well. They'll drop 8 or whatever they do and just rush 3 guys. But there are times when they drop, they drop out towards the boundaries, and the middle of the field is like, hey, that's what Baylor did to them. They threw down the guts.
Well, this game a year ago in Ames was among their worst offensive performances. They scored 21 points all on, spread the field, throw the football, a concept, which I'm fine with if that's what you find is going to take advantage of Iowa State. But they had 9 other possessions at Ames last year where they went nowhere. And that can't happen in this game.
Weather as I always say, or I was told to say this years ago, is weather can be friend or foe. And if it's an 80% chance of rain and that ball is going to be in the hands of running backs and you're going to have to run the ball and you're going to have a short passing game and you're going to have to take your shots, those big tight ends are going to be tough to handle. And that running back, if you don't tackle him in the rain, that dude is going to slither and slide all over the place. You have to be ready for that.
Did he go to Ricky's house last night? He's so funny. Texas blows out. I'm not saying blow him out. Well, I never said that. I said
they have better players, and they should.
You have better players and play. There's no excuse to come in Saturday or Monday, and Texas hasn't played their best and most complete offensive performance of the season. I do expect their defense to struggle at times with Iowa State, because Iowa State does have the nation's leading rusher. They do have a good quarterback. They are figuring themselves, and they're a different offense than you face week to week in the Big 12. Texas, even though they have improving linebackers, still at times can be a liability at linebacker. And with three tight ends and the running game, that's going to stress your linebackers in a big way. So I do expect Brock Purdy and Iowa State to make some plays.
Here's what they do. They scheme their run game. They don't let you stop their... You know how Chris Ash stopped Chuba Hubbard, who was banged up and hurt, and they had a bad offensive line? This offensive line is really, really good, and they scheme their runs with their tight end play.
Well, and there's no doubt that if you watch Matt Campbell, who, by the way, is a former defensive lineman, he understands the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some Kyle Shanahan to what they do with those tight ends and get them out in front of people and pull them in misdirection. So, again, point being, I expect Texas to give up some points in this game to Iowa State. But why can't this be the most complete offensive performance where you're getting your best players the ball, attacking?
Well, if it's not, you're going to lose the game.
That's correct. That's 100% right. That is 100% right.
Because if you don't play your best game, you're going to lose.
Because I don't know that I don't think they've played a complete offensive game this year outside of UTEP. They've played in spurts. They play in you know, how many times?
Comebacks.
It's usually in helter-skelter comeback situations this year. And then they were fortunate to beat West Virginia when Neil Brown wouldn't take field goals, but they didn't move the ball in the second half much at all. You know, the Baylor game was 27, and Baylor hadn't played in several weeks coming into that game. I'm looking for this offense to look sharp.
Texas
crisp.
Has the tight end killer, B.J. Foster.
Great. Put him in there.
Knock him out.
All right. Those are my expectations, Buck's expectations for Texas on Friday. What say you? We'll hear from Tom Herman throughout the morning. His concerns about the time off, are there any? They are as healthy as they've been. They have had 20 days by Friday between games. Also, what he thinks of ISU and that challenge they present for Texas on Friday. We'll also hit the hot and hot topics of this now rainy, drizzly Tuesday morning here on V&A. Appreciate you being there. 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming. Always on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
B&E on a Tuesday, show of the people, getting you into your holiday weekend. Thanksgiving on Thursday, 2 days out. Which is kind of your hump day of a three-day week, right? Drag you up over the hump with... good football talk, recapping week 11 in the NFL, looking forward to week 12, which is coming fast. They'll have three games on Thursday, including both Texas teams. For the first time in a while, we've come in a week, and the Houston Texans and Dallas Cowboys both won a game. And they're both 3-7 right now, Buck, through 10 games. Houston plays the Detroit Lions on Sunday, and if the Texans are on Thursday, I should say, in the early game, of course, the Lions always play that early window. If the Texans can win that game, that could be the coup de grace for one Matt Patricia, because I'm assuming their putrid performance against Carolina this past Sunday when they were shut out and lost to P.J. Walker and the Carolina Panthers, Matt Rhule's defense and with Coach Phil Snow there suffocating the Matt Stafford and the Detroit offense, no points at all. If this were not a short week, there's a lot of people in Motown that think this would have been plug pulled on Matt Patricia's, but since it is a short week to Thanksgiving, it won't happen. If they were to lose to Houston on Thursday with 10 days off, you might see the end of Matt Patricia in Motown.
And I would expect on Thursday that the Dallas Cowboys will take that momentum after Minnesota and wallop Washington. I don't expect that to be a close game. I expect the Cowboys to come out with that defense that they did. And I know Washington's defense is good, but Washington, the Cowboys have a lot of weapons offensively, and I think they'll use them. And I think they'll win by 10 or more over the Redskins. The team they call Washington football team.
Did you say wallop?
Yeah, I think they will. I don't think that'll be a close game, Thursday's game.
Really?
No, I don't. That's a moneymaker right there. The Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day against Washington at home and riding the momentum. I don't think they'll go backwards. I think the Cowboys will get better offensively, better defensively. I still think they'll lose two more somewhere. I mean, there's that, you know, you gave me the schedule yesterday, but I still see possibly two more losses in there. And after hearing that dude that I don't like to hear before our show in the morning, when he came up with those thoughts about, do you really want to win this division and lose out, go from like the fourth pick to the 19th pick by just going and playing in a playoff? Damn, that's a lot. That's a drop.
Well, someone's going to win the division in the NFC least. And obviously Washington and Dallas, the winner on Thursday, in a good spot because they'd be 4-7. But I mean, the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Washington football team are all 3-7. The Eagles are 3-6-1. So that tie is what
you play to win the game. But if you win that division and just play in a playoff game, you could drop all the way to almost 20th.
Yeah, because you're a playoff team.
No thanks.
The way they see the draft. I mean, do we have this? Hey, this is reports from ESPN yesterday. So Mike McCarthy coming off the bye week, trying to get his team pumped up and fired up for their game in Minnesota because the division championship is still out there. Can we hear this interesting report of the lengths Mike McCarthy went to try to motivate his football club on Saturday before their Sunday game in Minneapolis?
Well, Red, if the Cowboys go on a run here, we might look back on this win over the Vikings as the sledgehammer game. Saturday night at the team hotel in a meeting in a ballroom, Mike McCarthy gets up at the front of the room and says, guys, I want to apologize. I don't think I did a good enough job emphasizing our objectives for the week, one of which was to hammer the ball out of Dalvin Cook's hands. At that point, McCarthy pulls out a sledgehammer, not a prop, a full sledgehammer that you can knock a wall down with, and someone rolls in a bunch of watermelons. Each one has a different objective written on it. McCarthy reads the objective, bam, smashes the watermelon. He goes down the row doing this. The players are roaring. McCarthy's pants are soaked. Finally gets to the watermelon with Dalvin Cook's picture on it. DeMarcus Lawrence jumps up and goes, I got to get that one. He hands over the sledgehammer to Lawrence. He smashes that watermelon. Look what it translates to in the game yesterday. They played inspired. They played physical. Donovan Wilson, the safety, comes up with two of the biggest plays in that game. A strip sack on Kirk Cousins where he probably got away with helmet-to-helmet contact. And then that monster hit on Dalvin Cook that jarred the ball loose and was recovered by none other than DeMarcus Lawrence. Just like that, Cowboys back in the NFC East race and maybe, Rhett, finding their personality here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that hit on
watermelons.
The Wilson, the hit on, how does Dalvin Cook get back up and start playing football?
I thought he broke
his
wrist. I mean, he popped him right in his arm where the ball was.
That was such a monstrous collision. But you do anything to, you know, you do something out of the ordinary, and there it goes. And that's why I think they ride the momentum of this game.
I just don't think the Cowboys are capable of walloping anybody. And Washington's been close in every game.
I mean, 10 good? 10 a good win?
Well, when they played back on the 25th of October, the Washington team walloped the Cowboys 25-3. That game wasn't close. And Cowboys were never really competitive. That was the game Andy Dalton got hurt, and things just spiraled. Then they went into their bye week. But, you know, the Giants, the Washington football team beat Cincinnati last week. It's their first win in a while since that Cowboys win. But they lost to Detroit by 3. They lost to the Giants by 3 before that. Their defense keeps them in games, and I still – you know, I like what the Cowboys did moving Zach Martin, their right guard to right tackle on Sunday. They shuffled up their offensive line to get their best unit on the field, and they looked good. I think the Cowboys can win that game Sunday. I agree with you.
Is 10 more? I mean, is 10 a lot of points?
Well, it's just they haven't done that this year.
Well, you know what I tell you? It's Easter once again. No one thought that the Oklahoma State, Oklahoma game, or the Iowa State, K-State game was going to be anything but I thought was a slaughter. And I think the Cowboys ride their momentum into this. But I still think they lose two somewhere, E. I just don't – they're not going to win them all from here. I hear guys going 7-0. I don't think 7-0, but I think they win this pretty easy.
I wouldn't sleep on Washington because Washington's defense is really good.
They have nothing offensively.
Alex Smith has stabilized a little bit. I mean, he's still Alex Smith, but yeah. Their run game's not great. And
yeah, they'll get after him.
And this is where I'm assuming that sledgehammer will be used again. And Mike McCarthy, by the way, this week when asked about that, said the key is a good hammer, and that's true. If you're ever doing any demolition, you got to have the right sledgehammer
or watermelons.
If you get the wrong hammer and it's not weighted, probably you can look like a fool, and those watermelons will just crack. They won't smash like you want them to smash.
Didn't Tom Herman use like a sledgehammer on some?
Remember with that, and the.
Did anything bounce back at him?
Yeah, the locker got the better of him when Tom Herman went to whack the locker when they were putting in the new expensive lockers.
Maybe we should have known then that game plan with that locker versus that sledgehammer.
Whoa, it bounced back on him.
Yeah.
Recoiled a little bit in that moment. Yeah, they were demoing the Texas old locker room before the new ones came in. Yeah, I mean, I think both Houston and Dallas can both get wins on Thursday. They're both capable.
Yeah, but I don't expect Detroit to play as bad as they did. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Detroit, I don't even know how to
don't they
that.
Play well on Turkey Day? Isn't that generally a
and Matt
good
Stafford
game?
And the Houston defense is still leaky. But both are coming off, both Houston and Dallas are coming off their best performances of the year. I think that's fair to say for whatever reason. And again, Deshaun Watson was awesome for the Texans on Sunday. That whatever we think of New England and Bill Belichick this year at 4-6, that defense is good. That secondary is really good. And Stephon Gilmore, the best corner, was back for that game.
Yes, he was.
And Deshaun Watson still picked them apart. And if you watch that game, he made some incredible throws that just, you know, good coverage, but threading the needle. Really, really played well in that game. And if he continues to play like that, Houston has a chance.
No, and I like their chances.
But they still don't have – they're still going with Duke Johnson as their only running back because David Johnson's still hurt. They're both 3-7 for a reason. Same with Washington. They're not very good. But I don't know about walloping. I don't know if Dallas is capable of walloping. But
I'll
maybe.
Just say 10 points. And some would think that's a pretty good wallop, double digits.
Well, that would be it. Would be a 22-point swing from actually a 32-point swing from the game just a month ago when they lost in Washington, and Washington dominated them. I mean, Washington really pushed them around, and
it looked like a different different Cowboys team. And on a short week, you can live off of that energy of what you did to Minnesota, I believe.
Well, and that, but I think if you were in Washington, you could say the same thing. Washington comes in with some momentum. They beat Cincinnati by 11 on Sunday, took Joe Burrow out in the process, and Alex Smith got his first win. So now they've kind of rotated quarterbacks there in Washington with Dwayne Haskins, and then it was Kyle Allen, and now Alex Smith is all the way back and at least gives them – I mean, you got two veteran quarterbacks in Andy Dalton and Alex Smith in that game. Those guys have played a lot of football in the National Football League, so maybe stabilizing forces. But I think it's a good football game, and those are your first two. Then the night game is Pittsburgh and Baltimore with the undefeated Steelers and the backsliding Baltimore Ravens who –
whatever the under is there, take it, because it always is.
Feels like it. But you know what? That Ravens defense isn't as good as it's been. They're not as good on the offensive line, Baltimore, which is exposing Lamar Jackson as a passer more, and their defense is not as explosive as we've seen it. For Baltimore, it all stems around that offensive line, which leads to them running the football, being a power running team, which helps Lamar Jackson and that offense go, keeps the defense fresh and off the field. With the offensive line struggling, it's leading to all the issues we're watching with Baltimore in a league in which the margins are very slim. They're not blocking as well. They're without Ronnie Stanley at left tackle. They're moving offensive linemen play series to series these days. That hurts their especially against Pittsburgh, Buck.
Well, Pittsburgh's going to try to prove their point that they can get their run game really going.
Yeah.
And that's at home, and that'll be kind of muckety. So they want to make sure that they're ready for the playoffs, that they can run and pass and – they worked hard on their run game last week.
That's the one I could see being a wallop, by the way.
Oh, you do? Really?
Well, because Pittsburgh is fresh. Pittsburgh is better. And the fact that J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram are both going to miss that game for COVID, you're down to Gus Edwards as your only running back in that game with a banged-up offensive line. That's going to further expose Lamar Jackson and put that defense on the field more than you want. And Ben Roethlisberger's feeling good, man. He loves throwing the ball to Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, J.J. Juju Smith-Schuster. That's the one that I could see being 10 points or more in favor of the Steelers. But we'll see. That's why they play the games coming up on Thursday. We're already to Tuesday. Those games 2 days out. Also coming up, we will get your hot or not topics on this rainy Tuesday morning, including the Texas basketball team opening up play tomorrow night in 2020, on the 2020 season. Get you some details on that. It's B&E with you. Show the people. 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
What's hot? And what's not?
This segment brought to you by Altstadt Beers, brewed right here in the heart of the Hill Country. Check out their state-of-the-art brewery, tap room, and restaurant next time you're in Fredericksburg. Altstadt Beers, no impurities, no regrets.
Hot or not on this eve of Thanksgiving Eve. That's right, we're 2 days out to the Big Turkey Day. And that will lead into a big College Football Friday for the Longhorns and Black Friday, Buck. I was reading this, you know, to show the people, try to help you out when we can, where we can. And a lot of people are eliminating Black Friday shopping from their plan. This might be the year to actually venture out with your mask on and be safe and socially distanced and wash your hands and all that. Because I was just reading this from WalletHub.com. It's a good website, by the way, if you're looking to save a little money. Okay. Find the deals out there, WalletHub. So here's what it says, Buck, that because Amazon is just such a juggernaut right now, and they're so busy during this time of year, that you can actually get real deals when compared to Amazon prices on key items on Black Friday. Like books, movies, and music up to 43% cheaper on Black Friday than you're going to find it on Amazon. That's almost half off compared to the Amazon price that you're paying for the convenience. Better price is going to be in the store because these stores want you in their stores this year, obviously, to move some stuff out of there. Clothing and accessories, 36% in savings. Toys, 36%. Video games, 34% cheaper than what you're going to find on Amazon. Furniture, appliances, computers and phones.
You know me, I go up in there. I go to Marshall's all the time. I'm not afraid of that mess.
Well, I think it's totally flipped now. There used to be where Amazon was trying to compete with the stores because people hadn't caught on yet, so your best deals were on Amazon. Now the best deals are flipped, and the better deals, the better prices are going to be in the stores.
Do I need to go to Target? Not be afraid to go ahead and go up into
Don't be elbowing people. Stay out of people's faces. Wear your mask. All that. But
I'm not doing
a
Black Friday thing. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm taking off of that one.
That's the day, though.
Well, that's going to be a bye week for me. I'm not doing that. I'm not going out on that Friday and elbowing with old ladies over gloves. That's not happening.
It's going to be the year because so many people are not going to go.
But I'm going to go to Target.
It's crowded, and you can get those deals.
I need to have that fryer, that air fryer for people.
Ninja.
When 20 of you get an air fryer, just say, it's a nice sale. It really is. Those fryers are good deals, I'm telling you.
Use ours all the time. Hey, how about Isaiah Collier with our producer with the topics we've missed? What's going on, Zay?
What's happening, fellas? So free agency has been pretty nuts. As we see, a lot of guys have been just stealing money, a.k.a. Gordon Hayward. But the Morris twins, they are a really interesting duo. Now, if you don't know about the Morris twins' history, obviously, they went to Kansas. They were big time there. But they are so close that they have the exact same tattoos.
Ooh, this is Markeith and Maurice?
Yes, Markeith and Marcus, actually.
Marcus, sorry.
And, so one plays for the Clippers, one plays for the Lakers, and they both re-sign. Marcus, who plays for the Clippers, signed a $64 million deal with the Clippers, while Markeith signed the league minimum at $2.5 million.
Oh,
but
sorry, bro.
But, great brother, they have a joint banking account.
No, those dudes are silly.
Hey, now. Am I hot or not on this, you're asking? They're close. They live in the same city but play on different teams. Do they live together?
I don't know. One has a child, so I don't think so.
But they pool their money?
Yeah. The one from the Lakers who got the minimum congratulated his brother. Like, hey, that bank account is going to look real nice.
So how many years is the $64 million deal that...
Four years.
You know, that was Sweeney did. Stay with his mom in the same room in the same bed for a long time during college.
Stop it.
So I don't know what to think about this, sharing the same bank account when I've got 64 mil and my bro only has 2 mil. I don't know if that's my brother's friend, close mate, living together. There's something that's just not right there with me. It doesn't sit right. I don't get it.
It's your twin brother, though.
I don't care.
You share the womb of mama.
I already look like that dude. Why am I sharing my money with that dude? Because I look like him?
And is it share and share alike? Like, I mean, if you do
that's
the simple
math. That's what I'm
math,
saying. Yeah. What else
the
are they sharing?
Math,
you know what I'm saying?
What else are they sharing? What are you asking me?
I'm not asking anything. I'm not speculating.
Sounds like you are. I'm looking at the bank account saying, if it's truly joint, because based on this new contract, who got the bigger one, Maurice?
Marcus.
Marcus.
Yeah,
I call him Maurice again. Marcus is going to be putting about $1.3 million per month into that account. $16 million a year at $64 million in 4 years. So $16 million a year, $1.3 million per. What'd you say Markeith is doing?
2.5.
Yeah, see?
Why do they have joint accounts? What's wrong with those two? Why are you having an account with your brother? I mean,
family.
Because you. No, no. That's
fam.
No, that's not fam. There's something up. There's something spooky going on here. I'm not figuring it out, but I will. TMZ, you need to get to the bottom. I mean, do they live with their mom? They don't?
I don't believe they do.
Are you that tight with a twin? Are you twins out there that tight? Will some twins tell me that you have a bank account together?
So
do you share the same dudes? I mean, what is this? Two twin girls, what's going on here?
Maybe they date twin sisters. That'd be kind of cool.
Zay, you need to get to the bottom of this. This isn't it's not normal. Right?
Well, my man Markeith will be putting about $208,000 a month into that account. My man Marcus will be putting about $1.2 million. But you know what? They share the money. They're brothers. You know what I mean? Brothers.
So at 80 years old, they will be living together, correct? Probably.
I don't think they live together now. They just share a bank account. Keep it simple. They probably share an accountant. Hopefully they have a good CPA to handle their taxes and all
that. That's what it's all about. It's all about the taxes somehow. Okay? Starting to try to figure this out a little bit.
You're just grasping at things.
I'm trying.
Twin sisters. Like, wee. All right. Thank you, Zay. There's hot or not. That's a topic we missed. What say you? Sharing an account with your brother, twin or not, seems a little odd. How big of a game is it for Tom Herman on Friday? Bucky's saying the Cowboys walloped the Washington football team on Thursday. Wow. Wallop time. B&E on the horn.